Hey, y'all. Yep, you're listening to Winning at Life, live financial news talk radio. The show that's going to help improve your financial decisions. I'm your host, Gregory Ricks. Welcome to the show. Unique thing about this show we've been doing for over 11 years is listener participation. You can call, ask a question, bounce an idea off of us, challenge us. Why? We want to talk about money.
Lisa in Ocean Springs, you're on Winning at Life with Gregory Ricks. How can we help you?
Yes, I'm about to leave my job, choice, because I'm probably not going to take the mandate, the vaccine. So I'm just wondering what I can do with my 401 or what my options might be.
You have several options, Lisa. Are you planning to go to work elsewhere?
Yeah, I'm going to have to because I'm not at retirement age yet.
Okay. One of your options is you could well move that 401k block of money to the new job that you're going to have in the future. If they have a 401k, you can move your money over there. Even if you can't make contributions yet, you should be able to move it there. Another choice is to leave it at the old job. I bet you don't want to do that in light of this. So,
I don't
think there is a good reason to leave it at the old job anyhow. So another choice you have, and I really like this one, is you could set up a rollover IRA account. So it's basically setting up an IRA and rolling the money from the old 401k into the IRA account. And you want to do this custodian to custodian. So meaning that firm's going to send the money over to the new account, whoever's handling the old 401k, so that it doesn't pass through your hands, because then it would be a taxable event. Then it gives you lots of choices of how to invest the fund. You don't have to do it how the new 401k choices are. You actually have a lot more than that. So that's kind of your three cases right there.
Okay.
Another thing.
Well, at least I have options. That's good.
You do have options. Is all of it traditional 401k money, or is there any Roth in there?
Traditional, I think. That's all that I have.
Okay. Well, then it'd go into a traditional IRA on the rollover. But I was just going to point out, if there's some Roth money into the mix, you'd be setting up an additional account for the money to roll over on the correct tax status there. Well, sorry to hear that for you, but hopefully the best to you in the future in that.
Well, thank you very much.
Thanks for listening, Lisa.
Thanks, Lisa, and good luck. I guess there's also the option of cashing it out, but she didn't sound like she wanted to do that at all, and that's probably for the best.
Well, no, that'd be taxable, 10% early withdrawal penalty, stuff like that.
All right, so if you want to do it, Lisa did. That is one of our most common questions ever, is what I do with an old 401k.
Yeah, see, she asked what was her choices to do with the 401k at the old job, and I gave her all the good choices. You brought up the bad choice.
Horrible
cashing
choice.
It,
horrible
paying
choice.
Taxes, paying 10% early withdrawal penalty either, because I'm assuming she's under age 59 and a half in that case. But, I heard, on the news, Southwest was having to cancel a lot of flights over the weekend. And I heard it was, kind of weather related and computer problems. Now, the vibe I'm getting, it's more of, we don't want to get the vaccine that's being required. So I think they're getting a lot of staffing problems from people calling in sick or quitting or something like that. They've got some bigger problems from that standpoint. And I saw something on another morning show. I think it was either Barney's or Maria, somebody talking about that. And it may have been this morning, but they were kind of having a discussion, and it's a pilot that left his company because of requirements that he didn't agree with, and they've started some independent pilot association and such, and helping each other finding work and such, because they don't want to go from that. Now, this is a tough thing that everybody's dealing with is is these requirements, and the government's requiring the military, government workers. I know healthcare facilities are requiring it. I definitely can buy into why the healthcare facilities are doing so there from that standpoint. But hey, I've got the vaccine. I don't have any problem with it, but I do find it difficult to require people to do that. Glad that decision isn't on me.
Stephen Homa, you're on Winning at Life with Gregory Ricks. How can we help you today, Steve?
Thank you all, James and Gregory. This is in regard to the subject of backdoor Roth. Did y'all determine or find out when, two parts question, when does the backdoor Roth expire? I've heard y'all speak about that. So I was wondering, when does that end? Do y'all know? I didn't hear any more on it.
They have not, you know, there's a few bills out there Congress is trying to get through. They've got reconciliation bill and then an infrastructure bill and then another bill where they just want to spend trillions of dollars. I'm not even sure what that
is anymore.
But that's somewhere mixed into that. I don't know quite where. I'd have to go and dig back, but we'll update you if any of that passes. We know it's on the table, but I saw today, Pelosi mentioned this banking requirement of the bank to notify if you've got more than $600 moving in or out of your account. And I think it's a mighty small amount. I'm not sure what they're looking for there, but that's a lot of records to tell you on. Hold on just a moment. But she says that's in the reconciliation bill. So, and she said it's going to stay there. And you know, they've got to pass that at some point there because they don't need, you know, all the votes for that. But okay, your other question?
And Gregory, thank you for that. I know y'all do a good job of updating. Second part is, if I want to take out my 401, well, I have a traditional IRA. I have a traditional IRA, and I want to do a backdoor Roth. So I know I'm going to have to pay the distribution and all, as we both know. How do I figure the tax efficiency, the bracket for how much I can do this year without bringing myself into another bracket, if I made myself clear? How do I determine when I'm going to put myself in a higher bracket? Is there a way to figure that on a backdoor Roth?
Well, I'll share with you, we have a method of helping you figure that out because we run a report. We collect everybody, you know, and maybe that's not the right term. But if you were to come into a meeting with us, one of the things we would ask you to bring at some point is your 1040. And we're going to run a report that searches for tax efficiencies, looks for ways to save money, kind of addresses your margin, Roth opportunities, and things like that. And then we can also go in and we can kind of look, you know, if your income was this or if you did this, and show you some different number situations there and how that might impact brackets and might impact distributions in the future. So we kind of look at that plus a lot more when you, you know, give us your 1040 to take care of. So for people that are coming in and exploring working with us, we run this report for them, and then clients each year on the review/strategy meeting, because everybody wants to talk about what happened, but most of that meeting's focused on what we need to work on and what can we improve upon going forward. So always look at it as more of a strategy session going forward. And we run that report every year. It's not something, well, we ran it, we're good. No, things change and the laws change. And we even look at, if the laws change in this report, how might it impact you going forward? So I hate they're discussing about that. But remember, if you've got an IRA or 401k and you're wanting to convert, well, I mean, you mentioned it a few different ways, but let me clarify here, Steve. If you have an IRA and you're wanting to do a backdoor Roth with some income, You can't have an existing IRA. That Roth, that IRA needs to be converted to a Roth. So that's not, that's got to be part of the discussion. So if you're doing a backdoor Roth, which is a workaround on high income limits to contribute to a Roth, but if you don't have an IRA, you can put money into a traditional IRA and then you could convert it the next day because there's no income limits on conversions. That is something they're trying to put in the tax bill to limit who can do conversions based on their income. But a backdoor Roth is simply that workaround when you make too much to contribute to a Roth.
Yes, and I'd have to pay distribution on it if I do it.
Yeah. Now, if you're moving a 401k, and let's say you have a traditional, some Roth in it, and you have some excess contributions that or after-tax dollars, after-tax dollars in the 401k, that Roth would go over to a 401k, excess contributions can go into the Roth, and after-tax dollars as well. Did I hit all the points? The Roth goes to a Roth, after-tax contributions and excess can. And that's kind of where we get into the mega backdoor Roth. That are available to us right now.
And Gregory, I'm sorry, one last one. Is there a certain, let's say my adjusted gross on the 1040 is about $100,000 between me and the wife.
Okay.
And I want to take some of my traditional IRA and go into a backdoor, I call it a backdoor Roth, to put it in my other Roth. So it's moved from a traditional IRA to a Roth.
Yeah, you're just doing some Roth conversions right there.
Simply. That's it, conversions.
No backdoor to it. You're just doing Roth conversions there as well on that.
Okay, thank you.
Okay, thanks for calling, Steve.
And I appreciate y'all updating all the time.
Okay.
Thank y'all.
We'll keep you apprised and everybody else on what's happening with those tax laws on the back end of the year. So I do expect some action on it because they still got to deal with the debt ceiling and, you know, they're wanting to get a reconciliation bill through there, so we'll see how it plays out.
David in Ponchatoula, you're on Winning at Life with Gregory Ricks. How can we help you, David?
I just have a simple question. I was thinking about rolling over. By the way, I'm a client of yours and been very satisfied. Let me get that out of the way. I think y'all do really good work, and I appreciate it.
Thank you, David.
My question is, I have a IRA at the bank at one of them, and I'm thinking about just rolling it over into a gold silver account. That's just simply my question. Would you push me to do that or not to?
Well, that's a tough question because first off, when we're having a recommendation like that, some of that could already be built into strategies that we're using out there, but just to go buy gold or just buy silver without a consideration of everything else, I cannot recommend you to do that. And that's one reason you have us on your team is to talk about that. And ultimately, we don't know where that goes and we don't know how that might impact your risk. I personally don't hold any gold, any silver on the outside or some account or in my closet, you know, I'm not doing that, and I'm not interested in doing that. But what I'm interested is managing assets in a way that they keep growing and also have a defensive strategy built in where I talked about Siegel's warnings, and I've been given these warnings, and this is to you as well as all other clients and people that aren't clients. You probably should be, but one of the reasons is we have to prepare for what's coming there. Interest rates are going to go up. Inflation is going to stay. It's going to impact our portfolios if we've not planned for it. We know there's going to be a pullback, but I don't want all of that pullback to impact my money or your money. And that's why we're having these pop-up meetings and getting clients in for reviews to get the tactical into the mix, which might be better than having gold or silver as a hedge.
All right, we're back live now.
Yes.
Kind of ran out of time.
Siegel from Wharton Business School kind of suggested that people are throwing a lot of money into cryptos instead of gold and silver. And I heard another comment from a banker this morning also that he said regulation is coming for cryptos. And in a way, he said, basically, cryptos are actually worth nothing. That's not quite quoting him, but I'm kind of describing what he said. And he said it's worth nothing. And actually, yeah, what is a crypto? What determines its value? What can I make with a crypto? What can I do with a crypto? Where in the world is crypto needed? When you get really thinking about it, it's a store of value with no actual basis. When you get to, and this isn't a reason for gold, but gold has a market value because it is used to make things. And actually, all gold ever mined is still there. It doesn't ever go away. It was Jamie Dimon. The quote is, "I personally think that Bitcoin is worthless." Yeah, he's chief executive officer of JP Morgan. Another quote here. "Our clients are adults. They disagree. That makes the markets," Dimon said. "So if they want to have access to buy yourself Bitcoin, you can't custody it, but we can give them legitimate, as clean as possible access." So JP Morgan started giving its wealth management clients access to crypto funds in July. But I got thinking about that comment when I heard him make that. And I said, you know, that totally, I totally get what he's saying. Because like, what is crypto worth? A digital coin? What is it worth? It's really not worth anything. And in any way to justify it has value or intrinsic value, it does not. And he went on to basically say that regulation is coming for cryptos, and that could be the end of it. Because there's two things that governments hate about it. They can't control it. Okay, we get that. They don't like things that you can use to avoid paying taxes, and criminals use it. It's all problematic. That's what, you know, and it's kind of, a couple of those problems are what they dislike about cash on the dollar as well, because you can avoid taxes and it's used by criminals.
Are you ready to do this segment from Saturday?
Yeah.
You're going to hear our guest, Wes Blanchard, the estate planning attorney, giving him a little assist after this call. Trey in New Orleans, you're on Winning It Life with Gregory Ricks. What can we do for you, Trey?
Hey guys, I appreciate the information you've already provided. Talking about the revocable trust, but basically the scenario is that my sister and I are the only heirs. Mom is up in age, still right mind. A little bit of real estate in the state. I'd say the state total value is probably about $500,000, mostly of some investments in cash. But the biggest thing that mom's wishes are is, her deal is, hey, at some point, if I get to the point where y'all have to put me in a nursing home, I don't want them getting my money. We know that there's a 5-year look back upon funds and everything. And I'm just wondering, what's the best way to handle this?
Let me ask you this. Okay, you said, don't want them getting my money. Who are you referring to?
Mom.
Okay. Are you worried about her money being protected, or are you worried about it being protected?
Her deal is this. We've had family members that, you know, that have had to go into a nursing home. Okay. Or she has had family members. Her mother and father both were there. Okay. She realizes that and understands that basically, if you are a private pay resident in a nursing facility, you're not getting any better care than if you're a Medicare, Medicaid resident there, okay? She also understands that, you know, if she's got funds and everything, that the first thing they're going to do is they're going to have a 5-year look back upon that, and they're going to, you know, reach back and drain all her funds until she has nothing. And basically, you know, she said, and it happened to them and their family, her deal is basically, look, I'm not going to get any better care if I'm paying the $10,000 a month bill versus being government subsidized. And I would rather y'all have the money than y'all being my sister and I versus paying it out to a nursing home.
Okay. I'm going to give you some thoughts, Trey, and I'm going to let Wes answer for some of that as well. But yeah, there is a look back, but they're not taking your money. If you have a hedge, it's let me finish because I've got some thoughts here. I've only done this for more than 30 years and dealt with this. And if you have a hedge, it's called long-term care insurance. Medicare does not pay for extended health care beyond a certain point, convalescent care like that, and those on the back end of life winding down. That's not covered. So somebody has to pay for that facility. Unless you have insurance that covers it, then it'll pay that portion of the bills. And I look at it, that's what her money's for. But also, it's not like all long-term facilities are built the same and cared for the same. The ones that Medicaid and such are paying for, that the government's subsidizing, because those people do not have any money. They show up poor. What? $2,000 is all they can have.
Yep.
And that facility is designed to take care of that level of cost and what the government's going to pay. If you've got means and can afford to, you don't have to stay. You can choose to because stay in that type of facility because it's going to cost less, but you can also stay in facilities that cost much more and have much better care. They won't smell like urine when you walk into the building, as an example. There's different quality. And yes, it costs more. And it depends. And that's where I define this as an advisor helping people build plans and have money. And I always talk to them about you need to. I think of it, and I think the people I work with, Trey, look at it from a standpoint of going out in the lifestyle you're accustomed to. And I think money should be prepared to be spent on the back end. And I kind of term it like this. You might need to burn through a couple $100,000 on your end of life. Why? Because you want to be taken care of. You don't want to be a burden to the family and kids. And the kids inheriting the money need to understand this. And this thing is you're not going to inherit it all because it's going to cost to take care of them. Somebody's going to have to do it. Wes.
Yeah, I think the point that you're getting at, Gregory, is, you know, these ideas of the nursing home coming back and grabbing your money, right? That happens when you're paying the bill through Medicaid. That's what happens.
Yeah, that look back means you moved assets.
That's right.
Off the grid, so to speak, or out of their name, and they're going to look back when somebody's got to pay the bills. They're going to look for who moved grandma's money.
Yeah,
that money needs to be back in her account because the state's not paying for it if she did have means that have since disappeared.
Exactly, and so you know, it's an issue that really it gets conflated all the time, right? Every so often we hear about this, and you know the concern is, I think, a genuine one, right? But I think the first thing to understand is what Gregory was getting at in the first place. If you pay the bill, you're not going to have any issue with the look back or them going back and grabbing money or anything like that. If the objective is to shift assets out and qualify for Medicaid when you otherwise would not have been able to, okay, now you're kind of opening Pandora's box here, and they're going to want to make sure all the I's are dotted and T's are crossed, and they do that, and they make it difficult on purpose. They do that on purpose because they don't want folks who would otherwise not qualify basically kind of gaming the system a bit, right? And that's, in essence, what an irrevocable trust is trying to do when it qualifies you for Medicaid.
All right, so we're back live now.
Yeah, there is no workaround. The 5 years that look back is there for a reason. And the way I look at it, you know, the government's not taking your money. Is the government's telling you if you run out of hospital days, they essentially don't pay for long-term care. You've got to be indigent, and if you don't want to pay them low cost or stay in the facility, you have to spend more money. The government says, we're not paying the bill, so you have to pay the bill. If you are unable to pay the bill, because you're poor, they're going to keep track of what they had to give you. In a sense, they're loaning you money. And if there's a way to collect it, they are going to collect it later, maybe by taking and selling your house you left behind after you die. And the kids said, well, that was our house. No, it wasn't. It was your parents' house. And they owed money to the government because the government loaned them money to take care of them in their final time because they didn't have it. Nobody's taking your money. This is why you also need a plan of taking income and having a plan on the back end that can handle needing to spend more money for care on the wind down. Executors. Do you really want to be an executor? See, when a loved one passes away, someone must take the job of winding up the financial aspects of the estate. That person may be identified in the decedent's will as the executor of the decedent's estate. If a family trust holds the decedent's assets, a trust document will designate a trustee. If there's no will or trust, the probate court will appoint an administrator. If any of these scenarios it might be important to listen to this show. The executor's assignment is financial in nature, to identify the estate's assets, pay off the debts, and distribute the remainder to the rightful heirs and beneficiaries. The executor is also responsible for filing tax returns and paying liabilities. Another problem they have to deal with is the beneficiaries of the estate that might not understand the process or with the reality, for example, of values, or, hey, I just want my cash now. Well, it's nothing's in cash. It's all in real estate. But it's a very important job, and I don't know that everybody's built for doing that. What's your thoughts?
I think you're hitting right on the nail on the head. Particularly that last thought where you noted it's a job. When you were going through all of those tasks, those obligations, the interactions that need to happen, that's what it sounded like. It's a job. Your employees are likely your family members.
One reason they might need a professional executor versus a family member or somebody that's not dealt with this, because I'm telling you, they're probably going to have to go do some research and reading up on what to do. So a professional executor might be advisable if warring or just plain unreasonable heirs are involved. This is not unusual in families of means. For instance, one heir who has basically been living off the grid, it's been my term today, I've been using it, somebody living off the grid.
Some mountain man.
Up in the Northwest for the last decade or so, might think that the family homestead will be put on the market is worth $10 million. And the other heirs, who's much closer to what's going on, know it's not worth a penny, over $5 million. Off-the-grid guy thinks he's getting shortchanged and is threatening to sue everybody and anybody connected with them. Or a financially challenged heir may be demanding his or her share of, I just need my cash now. I don't see what the problem is. Financial executor can squash such nonsense without getting you dragged into the weeds, we'll say, but that probably means court. A good estate planning attorney can recommend a good professional executor. So if you hire one or not, you may feel morally obligated to handle many things yourself. So I think that might be where that could be a team where they don't do everything. And I don't know, would a professional executor want to do everything?
Typically, you know, they do take on the majority of the work, if not all of it. And part of that is because they have to justify their fee, which is something that's worth considering as well.
Well,
right?
It won't be low. And that might be the problem why somebody's like, we don't, in meaning the Bennies, we don't want to pay for that.
Right, right. But, you know, mom or dad already understood that, hey, we're going to foot the bill for it in essence because it's still our money at the end of the day, right? And we're doing it for your best interest. We think you guys can't get along. You're going to squabble. You're going to fight. And then you're ultimately going to squander more of the money that we're leaving to you. So we're going to plug this professional in at a premium price to make sure that the damage is mitigated, limited to as much or as little as possible.
But they may not. So this might be a situation, okay, you're saying somebody with means is probably already lying those things up, that, say, has property worth $5 million or so, or a state of means. And, you know, we know that's not the norm.
That's correct.
Successions. And successions are probably, for the most part, less than a few hundred thousand, I might just guess, to say out there. So in a situation where people are having to deal with this, and it's not a big estate, but there's some real estate, cars, gold bars, IRAs, non-qualified money, and value of $300,000-$400,000. They, and this person wasn't named, but they could elect to hire some help to help through that. And my guess is we're calling it a professional executor, but it's probably an attorney. Huh?
Usually it is. And that's typically, you know, who we refer out to is another attorney who's got experience. And the reason for that is very, very logical. You have to know the ins and outs of the estate. When you've got heirs coming to you demanding X, Y, and Z, you have to be able to tell them, look, the law doesn't provide for that. Your rights are limited to these three things. And what you're asking for falls out of those categories. So, you know, you really do have to have a deep understanding. I'm sure there's some corporate executives out there who do a good job with this kind of thing and probably have seen enough of it through life experience that they could do a good job. But I think the biggest target is usually a pool of attorneys.
Now, if they've done, okay, in a lot of cases, they just don't have anything set up. Maybe, you know, we don't need a will. Might be one of the problem areas you see that people have to sort through and deal with, because they just said, well, they'll figure it out, or they just didn't get, you know, that round to it, get around to it, and so I got plenty of time, and something happened and they died. So if they had set up a will would have helped. Also, those trusts. And more common is what? The revocable trust in that case.
Exactly. Yeah, the revocable trust gives you the option to basically sidestep the probate, the succession process.
And that makes it easier.
Absolutely, because when you set up that trust, you have the objective of selecting someone. They're going to be called, in this case, we're talking about an executor, but when you talk about a trust, you're looking at a successor trustee, and the trustee basically has the exact same job as an executor would have. Distribute the estate, do it in line with what's left in the trust agreement, and make sure that everybody gets what they're provided for and, you know, does so efficiently.
So if somebody set up a revocable trust and they may not have anybody, does that come with designated who the executor is going to be?
Yeah, we usually run right through a designation, and typically when we're doing this for couples, you know, the first option is going to be yourself, your husband, your wife, and then the survivor.
Yeah, the survivor typically.
Exactly. Yeah. But what we're planning for in essence is, okay, when there's no more survivor, who do we want? Are we naming one person, two people? Are we going with a professional trustee? You know, what are our options and why are we looking to explore the various options? You know, you may have a child that you understand is very level-headed, very financially savvy, understands the ins and outs of what is left to the kids in the trust, and that it needs to be preserved. And you may feel great about that person and, you know, the discussion's over. Oftentimes, though, you got two kids that are on polar opposites of the spectrum, and you know, look, I can't appoint one of them and I can't appoint both of them, because in either situation, they're going to fight. Right. So you need that middleman. You need to appoint, you know, another family member or a professional.
Well, let's take that a step further. You're talking about the kids not being on the same page. And if they grew up together, they're probably not too much different in age. They've been used to all their lives having to work things out. Who got the Play-Doh, or, you know, no, I get the tricycle. You know, they've worked through things as kids and grew up knowing how to deal with. I'll take this in that step is what's in the mix is the spouses of those kids will have influence.
Absolutely.
And maybe think, you know, you don't realize it, but she's getting over, or he's getting over on you. I think you need to check, you know, I can see this, and that's talked about. And I know I've dealt with people that have said, you know, everything's good till that wife of his came into the mix and has been problems. Even the ones leaving it behind may, I've heard those conversations come up. You've probably heard that too. Another reason to have some paperwork. And I think a revocable trust does not lock you down. Those things are easy to change, right?
Yeah.
You could change the executor. You could change how it's given out.
Yeah, it's very pliable, and you can go in and make those adjustments. When we write them, you know, we do a flat fee for life. So you come in, you set it up with us, and when you want to make those adjustments, you don't get nickeled and dimed along the way.
Two questions real quick. Does it keep you out of the public view, a revocable trust?
It does.
Because it doesn't have to go through the court.
Yep.
It's already a plan laid in place. And the other, are you done? You don't need to fool with it again? Do the revocable trust? Well, we're good from now on?
No, you need to keep an eye on it just the same way you would with a will, right? I mean, you can't just put it in a drawer or a safe and, hey, look, it'll work. But, you know, you want it to be as effective as possible.
Yeah, I bet you come across those where they did something 20 years ago.
We do.
All right, thanks again to our guest, Wes Blanchard, the estate planning attorney. If you like what you hear, you want to contact Wes or Gregory, it's the same office number, 504-832-9200, or go to gregoryricks.com. I'm James Parker. We are Winning at Life with Gregory Ricks. Gregory Ricks & Associates is an independent financial services firm that utilizes a variety of investment and insurance products. Investment advisory services offered only by duly registered individuals through AE Wealth Management, LLC. AE Wealth Management, Gregory Ricks & Associates, W.J. Blanchard Law, LLC, J. Heath & Company, and Mortgage Gumbo are not affiliated companies. Investing involves risk, including the potential loss of principal. Any references to protection, safety, or lifetime income generally refer to fixed insurance products, never securities or investments. Insurance guarantees are backed by the financial strength and claims-paying abilities of the issuing carrier. This radio show is intended for informational purposes only. It is not intended to be used as the sole basis for financial decisions, nor should it be construed as advice designed to meet the particular needs of an individual situation. Annuities are insurance contracts designed for retirement or other long-term needs. They provide guarantees of principal and credited interest subject to surrender charges. Annuity guarantees and protections are backed by the financial strength and claims paying ability of the issuing insurer. Hypothetical examples have been provided for illustrative purposes only. It does not represent a real-life scenario and should not be construed as advice designed to meet the particular needs of an individual situation. Gregory Ricks & Associates is not permitted to offer, and no statement made during the show shall constitute legal or tax advice. Our firm is not affiliated or endorsed by the U.S. government or any governmental agency. The information and opinions contained herein provided by third parties have been obtained from sources believed to be reliable, but accuracy and completeness cannot be guaranteed by Gregory Ricks & Associates. Neither AE Wealth Management nor advisors providing investment advisory services through AE Wealth Management recommend or facilitate the buying or selling of cryptocurrencies. We are Winning at Life with Gregory Ricks.